So it's an odd topic tonight. I'm calling it inner transcendence, but it grows out of today, in some ways. Today is the in the traditional Christian calendar known as All Souls Day. Yesterday was All Saints Day. And you might ask, what's the difference between these? And so the very traditional Christian view, and this is rooted in the Middle Ages, and I believe the Roman Catholic Church still looks at it much in this way. All Saints Day is a day devoted to people in heaven. That the Christian definition of a saint really is someone who's gotten to heaven, and the saints that are widely known, the ones that the church declares saints, those are the ones where the church is making a public statement, we're sure this person is in heaven. But it's always been the understanding that, of course, countless people live wonderful lives, they just don't get famous, and so all these people go to heaven. And so the people in heaven, they're beyond any suffering, they're in the presence of God. And so in the Catholic understanding on All Saints Day, we pray to them for help. We pray for their assistance. And because they're in the presence of God, they're in a unique place to provide assistance to those of us suffering on earth. By contrast, All Souls Day is for people who are in the place known as purgatory. So the people in purgatory, again, according to the very Christian understanding, these are people who are guaranteed that they will get into heaven someday, but when they died, they were not particularly free of sin. They still had a lot of sin, even though they're basically a good person. And so purgatory is a place of purgation, a place of cleaning, where they're suffering in order to cleanse themselves. So it's a place of suffering, but it's also a place of tremendous hope because they know that they're going to get into heaven. And of course, the third sort of option for what might happen to you in the afterlife in this worldview is hell. And there's no day devoted to hell because the people in hell are beyond hope. And so any prayers sent to for people in hell would be wasted according to the Christian understanding. And of course, these three worlds were depicted in tremendous poetic beauty by Dante in the Commedia, the Inferno, Purgatorio, and Paradiso. And so what intrigues me about this is, I'm not really in a position to say with any authority exactly what happens when we die, but what intrigues me is taking a more Jungian look at this. What do these three places represent within us? You know, the inner heaven, the inner purgatory, the inner hell. I think we're all familiar in some ways with an experience of inner hell. I think that's something deeply human. We know what that place is. It's a place that feels like it's beyond hope. And I think, how can I say? I often say that inner pain is the great internal PR agency. It sends out all these messages which, you know, may seem very urgent. They may be repeated over and over again, and they have little to no truth content, much like advertising. And so pain sends this message that there is no hope, that it'll never get better, that life is always going to be this way. That can be the consistent message of pain. And in my experience, it's not true at all. But while that message is being broadcast, it's a very compelling message. I don't believe that there is, in fact, any place within us that is beyond love, beyond healing. Despite what pain might say. inner purgatory is more, you might say, when we're in the struggle, but we have hope, we have vision, we have a sense of where we're going, you know. And a lot of healing work is along these lines, you know. Some healing work is tremendously painful, but we go through it knowing, okay, I'm going to endure this because I'm clearing something, because I'm getting somewhere. And so it's a very different kind of suffering. It's not the meaningless suffering that, you know, the way that the hopeless place feels that things are meaningless. And I'll just say also, it's sad. I think there are so many people who don't even know something as good as the inner purgatory. You know, I think we live in a society in which so many people, there some form of hell, they've just resigned themselves to this is the way life is, and that's very, very sad. It's curious to me that we live in a society in which the message of healing has been so deeply lost. And I'm not even sure why that is necessarily. I mean, it is true that healing is the road of healing is long, it's hard, it takes focus, it's, you know, all these things that are at odds with an immediate gratification culture. Yeah, this world definitely needs not just people who talk about healing, but people who are healers, people who embody the energy of healing. This world desperately needs that. And so inner hell, inner purgatory, and then inner heaven would be a place that is not in struggle, and can actually support us in our struggle. And so one word we might use for this is transcendence. And I immediately want to say that it's tricky, because I think this society is very, very familiar with what I would call a false transcendence. The false transcendence of sort of being up in the head and being cut off from vulnerability. And that is a way, I think, that people, you know, it's a very tempting way to avoid pain in life, you know, to just numb myself out completely. I'm just going to think my way through life, you know, that sort of thing. And it can feel like a kind of transcendence when you compare it to the people who are, you know, suffering, you know, troubled by emotional issues. But it's sterility. It's not connected to life. It's paradoxical. Buddhism really is calling us to greater and greater levels of sensitivity, greater and greater levels of feeling more deeply. And what Buddhism is offering is not at all a immunity or an escape from the painful experiences of life, but a way to move through them meaningfully. And so what is this, it's even hard to talk about, in this thing that corresponds to inner heaven, this, you know, we might use the term higher self. Certainly, Buddhism uses the term Buddha nature, which I think is one particular aspect of it. Jung talked a lot about the self as an entity in the psyche. different from ego. You know, ego has its drives and its desires and wants to control and wants to know everything and all that. And the self is very different. The self is about wholeness. And as we move toward greater wholeness, that's often difficult for ego, requires sacrifices on the part of ego. Jung has this great statement, any victory for the self is experienced as a defeat for the ego. And I'd say one way that this higher self helps us, or can help us, is through a kind of wisdom, a kind of deeper knowing. This is not a head knowing, you know, not, it's very far away from the strategic mind. Gandhi talked about it as his inner voice. Every day he would sit in meditation and he would consult with his inner voice, and ultimately his inner voice helped him, you know, guided him on his political action work. If we can become quiet enough, if we become centered and still enough, there is a place in our core that knows. Doesn't know everything that the head in its curiosity wants to know. Like the head wants, you know, tell me the whole journey. I want the whole map right now, you know. We don't get that, but we know the next step. We know exactly what we need to know in this present moment, in that place. And contacting that place takes a tremendous amount of silence, a tremendous amount of focus. It also takes a tremendous amount of surrender, because ego has to let go of its own agendas, you know, because ego very well, you know, often has its agenda. Well, I want it to turn out this way, you know, like that kind of thing. And we have to let go of that and allow this deeper wisdom to emerge. And I'd say also there's, similarly from this deep inner source, there's a kind of, I don't know what the right word for it is, a kind of courage or a kind of resilience. We're all much more powerful than we think we are. We're all much more courageous than we think we are. You know, ego likes to set these very narrow limits. Well, I can do this much, you know, that kind of thing. And sometimes it takes that surprising situation that you know, is a little bit outside of our control for us to be surprised by how much we rise to the occasion, you know. And so it's a question, even in calm, everyday circumstances, can we tap into that deeper strength? Can we arrive in that deeper power? And again, this is not about ego, because ego, you know, the strategic mind loves to plot, you know, how do I get more power? How do I get more control? You know, like that kind of thing. And it's not about that at all. It's about arriving more deeply in ourselves. And ultimately, it is a gesture of surrendering and allowing rather than a kind of doing. I would say separate from this capacity even is what Buddhism calls Buddha nature. And Buddha nature is very simply raw awareness. The awareness that we have, that we're thinking thoughts. Our thoughts are happening, and we're aware that they're happening, you know? And often we get so lost in the thoughts that we're not paying attention to the part of us that is watching the thoughts come and go. You know, the part of us that is alive in all our sensory experiences. You know, Rinzai talked about the true man that you know, went in and out of our eyes in all nakedness, you know, having that direct, immediate experience of the world. And of course, this is the work of mindfulness. All mindfulness is about trying to exercise just our awareness of this Buddha nature, our awareness of this raw consciousness. And for those who have practiced mindfulness, there's something incredibly grounding about it, incredibly calming. It actually is an incredible tonic for the entire nervous system to practice mindfulness. And I think I would say also, it's something I don't fully understand, but there are deep currents of love and deep currents of healing all around us at all times. And if we can just open ourselves to that, we can receive it, you know, and in some sense, it's the tragedy of life that we walk around, you know, locked up in our ego cage, you know, so miserable, not realizing that there's this greater healing energy all around us. So at this point, I'm going to share the quote sheet. A very classic image from the Upanishads. Two birds living together, each the friend of the other, perched upon the same tree. Of these two, one eats the sweet fruits of the tree, but the other simply looks on without eating. The two birds are the jiva, or the individual ego, and the Ishvara, the transcendent self, both existing in an individual compared to a tree. They exist together as the reflection and the original. This whole idea that our ego is one bird, but then there's another bird in the tree who's simply watching our ego. The second one is a classic Zen koan. When Heza Zhenshui of Hochon came to study with the Zen master Qingyuan, the master asked where he was coming from, and Zhenshui said, from Tsai Shu. What's new there? Said Qingyuan. When Zhenshui remained silent, the master said, tiles and pebbles are still in your way. Zhenshui said, do you have true gold to give to others? And Qingyuan said, even if I had some, how would you hold on to it? And there's something profound about that, because of course the whatever wisdom there is within us, whatever strength there is within us, we don't get to hold on to it. It's ungraspable. We get to relax into it and allow it, but we don't get to control it. You know, and there's something very profound there. A little earlier, Brett was recommending Hafiz, and he appears on our quote sheet tonight. He simply says, an awake heart is like a sky that pours light. The sage of Concord, Ralph Waldo Emerson, says, every man is a divinity in disguise, a god playing a fool. A wonderful passage from Papa Walt here. Apart from the pulling and hauling stands what I am, stands amused, complacent, compassionating, idle, unitary, looks down or is erect or bends an arm on an impalpable certain rest, looking with scythe-curved head, curious at what will come next, both in and out of the game and watching and wondering at it. Aldous Huxley said, "The last and most important branch of nonverbal education is training in the art of spiritual insight, to know the ultimate non-self which transcends the other non-selves in the ego, but which is yet closer than breathing, nearer than hands and feet. This is the consummation of human life and the end and ultimate purpose of human existence." Dag Hammarskjöld, that remarkable man, said, "To have humility is to experience reality, not in relation to ourselves, but in its sacred independence, to see it, judge, and act from the point of rest in ourselves. Then how much disappears, and all that remains falls into place. In the point of rest, at the center of our being, we encounter a world where all things are at rest in the same way. Then a tree becomes a mystery, a cloud a revelation, each man a cosmos of whose riches we can only catch glimpses. The life of simplicity is simple, but it opens to us a book in which we can never get beyond the first syllable." René Dumas says, "You cannot stay on the summit forever. You have to come down again. So why bother in the first place? Just this. What is above knows what is below, but what is below does not know what is above. One climbs, one sees. One descends, one sees no longer, but one has seen. There is an art of conducting oneself in the lower regions by the memory of what one saw higher up. When one can no longer see, one can at least still know." The great master Ajahn Chah says, "Just go into the center of a room and put one chair in the center. Take a seat in the center of the room, open the doors and the windows, and see who comes to visit. You will witness all kinds of scenes and actors, all kinds of temptations and stories, everything imaginable. Your only job is to stay in the seat. You will see it arise and pass, and out of this, wisdom and understanding will come." Eckhart Tolle says, "Surrender to the grief, despair, fear, loneliness, or whatever form the suffering takes. Witness it without labeling it mentally. Embrace it. Then see how the miracle of surrender transmutes deep suffering into deep peace." Sharon Salzberg says, "Most of the time we think we are our thoughts. We forget or never notice that there's an aspect of our mind watching these thoughts arise and pass away. The point of mindfulness is to get in touch with that witnessing capacity. Sometimes I ask students to imagine each thought as a visitor knocking at the doors of their house. The thoughts don't live there. You greet them, acknowledge them, and watch them go." And Odia Judith said, "How would you behave if you knew you were a god or goddess? How would you treat yourself? How would you treat others? What kind of consciousness would you hold about your smallest actions if you knew their effects influence the rest of creation? If your awakening could bring joy to the multitude, what kind of mindfulness would that inspire?" Tara Brach simply said, "Presence is the essence of true refuge." Mark Epstein said, "There is a yearning that is as spiritual as it is sensual. Even when it degenerates into addiction, there is something salvageable from the original impulse that can only be described as sacred. Something in the person, dare we call it a soul, wants to be free, and it seeks freedom any way it can. There is a drive for the transcendence that is implicit in even the most sensual of desires." Leanne Taylor simply says, "We are all butterflies. Earth is our chrysalis." Kamen Kojuri says, "You have no choice. You must leave your ego on the doorstep before you enter love." Colette O'Mahony says, Higher self makes you feel whole. Ego makes you feel fragmented. Higher self makes you feel chosen. Ego makes you feel rejected. And Carabrioni says, nature helps us connect with higher levels of consciousness, beauty, aromas, and pleasant sounds, promote an exaltation of the spirit because we are part of this beautiful symphony. When we pay attention to it, we synchronize with the dance of life. And when we are in tune with the dance of life, we can access the infinite power of creation that is our birthright.